Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us, a very special guest, Councilmember Julie Menin. She currently represents the 5th District in New York City Council. Her district spans the east side of Manhattan, from Midtown to the Upper East Side and Roosevelt Island. Julie is an attorney, civic leader, and former small business owner with over 2 decades of experience in the public and private sectors. She currently serves as the chairperson of the City Council Committee on Consumer and Worker Protection, and she is also on the council's committees for sanitation, parks and recreation, environmental protection, health, civil service and labor, and children and youth. During her tenure with New York City Council, Julie has passed over 16 bills, which she was the primary sponsor, including the groundbreaking Healthcare Accountability Act. Before turning to the elected official, Julie served as Commissioner of Development, the Department of Consumer Affairs, and Commissioner of Media Entertainment. Among her accomplishments during this period, Julie negotiated the historic deal to bring the Grammy Awards back to New York City in 2017, resulting in a $200 million economic benefit. Julie has done so much throughout her career, both in the public and private sector. It's a pleasure to have you on. And if I kept going, we'd be here another 24 minutes. The show would be over just with your accomplishments. So I'm going to cut it there. And I still have 3 or 4 more pages. You can go online and see her website. Julie is a person that you should know. She's a mover and shaker in New York City. She is what makes New York City run. She's really behind the scenes now in the City Council. Julie, welcome to Reaching Out.
Greg, thank you so much for having me. I was thinking about it before I came on today. We have done this show, you and I, together. I've been on your show numerous times, and it's just always an honor and pleasure to be with you.
Thank you for coming back. The City Council's budget had hard negotiations between the City Council and the mayor to determine funding priorities. Among the priorities to be considered is the cost of healthcare. You have been an outspoken opponent of excessive healthcare spending by the city. Your argument is that reducing healthcare costs, our city could save hundreds of millions of dollars, which we agree, for the fiscal year. What inroads have you made with the administration to reduce the city's healthcare related costs?
Well, Greg, thank you for asking about that, because medical debt is one of the leading causes of debt for New Yorkers. And right now in the city's budget, we are currently spending $11 billion per year, which amounts to approximately 10% of New York City's budget on public sector employee health care. Now, that $11 billion just 5 years ago was $6 billion. So it's almost doubled in the past 5 years. So what I'm doing about it is I introduced a bill which passed the City Council and which the mayor signed, called the Healthcare Accountability Act. This is first in the nation, where we're creating an Office of Healthcare Accountability. It's already been set up. It's housed within the Department of Health. And what that office will do is it's going to list the price of every single medical procedure at every single hospital. And the reason that's important is if, for example, you're a woman and you're giving birth by C-section, if you go to Montefiore Hospital, you will receive a bill for $55,000 for that C-section. If that same woman goes to another New York City hospital, that same C-section could be $17,000. So there's enormous price discrepancies. And I could give you, so many examples. Colonoscopy at one hospital is $13,000 on the high end, $2,000 on the low end. So consumers don't know what they're going to be charged for medical prices. And if you think about it, there's no other industry where you're procuring a service, albeit at your most vulnerable time, and you don't know what you're going to be charged for that service. You get home from the hospital and you're socked with an enormous bill. So this new office will show New Yorkers how much every hospital is charging for their medical procedures, but it's also estimated to save New York City $2 billion a year. How? Because by New York City government knowing what these hospitals are charging, it allows us to go in, harness the city's purchasing power to drive down costs.
Julie, you bring up a very good point because in New York City, being on the committee that has to determine the health care for New York City employees, we have, I would say, a number of hospitals that our members could use. If we're able to somehow get the hospitals to charge the same amount of money, or if not, we just say we're not going to use them for that service. This would go a long way to saving billions of dollars because you need to know what you're paying for. You need to know what the services are. And I don't think a surgery at Montefiore should cost more than surgery at Columbia Presbyterian and vice versa. I think everything should be uniformal. We should pay the same price, and we should know what we're paying for, and that should be reflected in the health care cost to the city.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that is really shocking, Greg, is that we found out in the hearing for this bill that three New York City hospitals refused to meet with the city of New York to even discuss their pricing. Now, if you think about it, New York City government is the second largest purchaser of healthcare in the state. So what is that saying? That these hospitals won't even come to the table? And in this battle, I was very fortunate to have incredible labor allies who were in the trenches with me, 32BJ, DC37, and others. And one of the things that came out also, in terms of this information is 32BJ did a study on the bill, and it did show that we could save $2 billion a year. 32BJ is the fourth largest purchaser of healthcare in the state. They have recently dropped New York Presbyterian from their plan because of the high cost that New York Presbyterian is charging. So we need to be harnessing our purchasing power. We finally will have the price transparency thanks to this bill and new office. And so I'm really excited about the potential to drive down skyrocketing excessive healthcare costs.
And what you have done here in New York City could go national. I remember going to Union Station in Washington, D.C., coming out of the coming off the train and seeing an ad by Fat Joe about the health care. So I said, even the ads down there. So it's actually lobbying Washington,
Yes.
D.C. So I think this thing should go across the country.
Thank you. And that's exactly right. Fat Joe was amazing. He came to our announcement and he's been an incredible ally.
As a former commissioner of the Department of Consumer Worker Protection, you licensed and regulated thousands of businesses in New York City. And now, as chair of the Council's Committee on Consumer Worker Protection, the City Council has passed and the mayor has signed into law the bill to license hotels. What does this law do?
Well, thank you for asking about that, Greg. This law is very important to me because basically, as a former commissioner of consumer affairs, this is a consumer protection issue and a public safety issue as well. We have 769 hotels in New York City. Almost every other city across the country licenses hotels where they come in every year or every other year and they get a license to make sure that they have the legal authority to continue to operate. The reason why I took on this issue of licensing hotels is it's a public safety issue. There are over 14,300 criminal complaints to the NYPD about hotels. And what we're talking about, we're not talking about all hotels. We're talking about certain bad actor hotels. And it's also an issue of there are over 39 murders at some of these hotels in recent years. So we know that this is a big public safety issue for communities. It's also a worker protection issue. And that's why I was thrilled to partner with HTC on this important bill, because we know, for example, that the majority of housekeepers at hotels are women and often women of color. And we know that there is enormous amounts of wage theft and deplorable working conditions. And that is why this bill does a number of things. It has a subcontracting ban on housekeeping, which basically requires hotels to directly employ housekeepers and front desk staff. And that is really meant to address this issue of the deplorable working conditions and wage theft that we heard so many stories about. So we can make sure that we're lifting wages and addressing some of these bad working conditions. It also requires panic buttons for all workers in the hotels who are working as housekeepers. That's very important as well. There have been numerous instances of rape and sexual assault against these housekeepers. And so by providing them with panic buttons, it's a real worker protection issue as well. And then there are provisions in there about harmful chemicals, making sure hotels have proper standards so when workers are utilizing these chemicals, they are protected.
Well, tell us, why this is so very important. Tell us why.
Well, it's so important, again, first of all, for the public safety issue. There's a reason why the five district attorneys in New York signed on to my bill. There's a reason why New York Attorney General Tish James signed on to the bill. The PBA signed on to the bill. Why did they do that? On public safety grounds, because public safety is still one of the top issues that is affecting communities across the city. And when we have a situation where certain bad actor hotels, you have 14,300 criminal complaints to the NYPD about certain hotels. And I'll give a specific example. The Umbrella Hotel in Kew Gardens in Queens, for many years, hundreds of neighbors would complain about crime at the Umbrella Hotel. But no one was doing anything about it. And then finally, in 2021, in January of 2021, someone was murdered at the Umbrella Hotel. So then Mayor de Blasio says, well, I'm going to shut down the Umbrella Hotel. Well, guess what? He couldn't shut it down right away because the city had no jurisdiction because hotels were not licensed. So that is one of the many reasons why we need to license hotels. It gives the city jurisdiction, regulatory jurisdiction. So when you do have bad actors, the commissioner has the authority then to step in. And so, as a former commissioner of that agency, that is a very important regulatory tool. And it really is shocking to think about the fact that we regulate all sorts of businesses that we license, and yet hotels were completely unlicensed, like the Wild Wild West.
And let me ask you, where's this Umbrella Hotel located in Kew
Well,
Gardens?
it shut down now, but it was located in Kew Gardens in Queens, and it was a hotbed of crime. And that is why hundreds of
Oh, no, I'm trying
neighbors.
to figure out the street. That's right.
In Kew Gardens, I don't have the exact
Okay.
street, but in 2021, after the murder, de Blasio tried to shut it down. And for weeks, he was saying, threatening to shut it down. But if the city is not licensing it, it becomes harder to shut the hotel down. Eventually, the hotel closed. But that is one of numerous examples I could give about a bad actor hotel where the city had real difficulty trying to regulate it because they didn't license it.
Julie, I can tell you, you passed 16 bills that you were the sponsor. That's got to be a record. That's got to be a
Well,
record. If somebody's done more bills, that they were a sponsor of, I don't know. That's unheard of. I mean,
thank you,
there are
Greg.
people that
Thank
go through
you.
their whole career and don't sponsor one bill and don't pass a bill because they just think they're just to say I'm a council person. And but you are actually in the trenches working on every level of city government.
Thank you. No, I so appreciate that. Look, I'm trying to pass meaningful legislation. I'm not interested in incremental legislation that doesn't move the needle. And that is why, with my bills, I've really tried with the hotel licensing bill, with the Office of Healthcare Accountability, to pass meaningful legislation that is helping to protect New Yorkers and really protect their quality of life, make their quality of life better. So, for example, with the hotel license bill, that is going to lift wages for hotel workers. That is really important. In hotels where the hotel is no longer subcontracting housekeeping, and we have an example of this at the Margaritaville Hotel, where they stop subcontracting, they directly employ the workers, and those workers' wages were raised. And that is incredibly, incredibly important.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. With us as Council Member Julie Menin, and we're speaking about, I would say, legislation in New York City, but mostly her accomplishments because we are very impressed. Before joining the City Council, you founded the nonprofit New York City Kids Rise. So here again, we're talking about one of your accomplishments. This is a program that aims to increase economic opportunities for every public school student by automatically enrolling them in a college savings account starting in kindergarten with initial $100 allocation. What made you take on this initiative? And before you say that, I would say back in 1994, we started at the union an annuity for our members at $100. And at the time, they said, that's nothing. But now, some of our members, and I want to say six-figure annuities, going toward going toward six figures with the accounts growing. So I'm not going to throw out the exact number, but I mean, you start. You can't finish until you start. That's something. If you start with $100 at kindergarten, what made you take on this initiative, and
Well,
what
I
has been the
love,
result?
yeah. So I had an aha moment that made me become interested in this idea. I was commissioner of the Department of Consumer Affairs in 2014, and I read in an article that the city of San Francisco was doing a college savings account program where they were giving $50 to each public school kindergartner in San Francisco. And the controller of San Francisco had launched that project. So I went to meet with him because I wanted to hear firsthand and see firsthand what they were doing. And I was blown away. I thought it was so incredibly important. So I came back, met with then Mayor de Blasio to try to sell him on this idea that we should be doing this with the 85,000 kindergartners we have in New York City. He did not want to publicly fund it. So I went out and raised the money. I raised $10 million for it. And I started our own 501c3 NYC Kids Rise. I was a founding board chair, and we partnered with the city's Department of Education and the Gray Foundation, which was the financial backer of it, to do this seminal project. And now we are in every single school across the city of New York. We have done over 200,000 of these college savings accounts. And it's so important because the research shows that a student who has a college savings account is three times more likely to go to college. If no one in your family went to college, and starting when you're 5 years old, when you're in kindergarten, someone says, "Look, I believe in you, and we're saving money for you to go to college," that aspiration becomes a reality. And that is what we've done with this program. It's transformative. We invested the money in the state's 529, so that $100 is growing exponentially over time, so that upon 12th grade, that money can then be used for college, for vocational school, for community college. It's just a transformative program, and I'm so proud of it.
Now, are parents able to contribute more to that account? Say I'm a parent, you start me off with $100, you have the account. Can I add 25? Can I add 50? Can I go over the years and put more money into that account?
I'm so glad you're asking that, Greg, because yes, that is how we structured the program. Parents, grandparents, neighbors, local businesses. So we have a whole model where we try to get others to put money into the account. So for example, a local business can adopt a class and provide, maybe they're giving $10, $20, $100 to each student in that class. That's the model which we focused on. So yes, parents, grandparents, anyone can contribute into that child's 529. And so that is why we're seeing these accounts really grow over time, and we're getting the local community involved in that child's future. And I mean, if you think about it, and I say this as a parent, there's no more precious resource than our children. It is a
Sure.
future.
Wow. Doing your first term in the council, you chaired the Small Business Committee. You were also a former small business owner yourself and experienced firsthand the bureaucracy and the bureaucratic red tape that New Yorkers often deal with. Did you help to streamline the bureaucracy to help make it less bureaucratic, I mean, less strenuous,
Yep.
in starting to maintain a small business in New York City?
Yeah, no, thank you for asking that. I am a former small business owner. I started my career as a lawyer. as a litigator and a regulatory attorney, but then I left the practice of law after 7 years to open up a restaurant and catering business in Lower Manhattan. I opened my business in 1999, had about 100 employees, and I saw firsthand how difficult New York City makes it to open and operate a small business. You have to deal with an alphabet soup of city agencies, take numerous days off work just to get a permit. And it's not just restaurants, like a barber shop. If you want to open up a barber shop in New York City, it's 56 different steps, 12 of which must be completed in person. So imagine that small business owner who wants to open up the barber shop, they're taking off numerous days of work just to go to that city agency in person. That's absurd. So I passed a bill and the mayor signed it. Called the One-Stop Shop Bill. And basically, it consolidates every permit and license that a small business needs to open and operate. It's all online. There's one portal. So the businesses are no longer dealing with all these different agencies, taking off a week of work to try to figure out, go in person to these city agencies. So it's really an important bill. And so it's already happening. The portal has already been created, and we're hearing great feedback about it because it's really cutting down on the bureaucracy and red tape that is hurting small businesses across our city.
In your council district on the east side of Manhattan, rats plague many parts of the area. Many things have been tried to combat rats, few with great success. You are known for thinking outside the box. I understand you created a rat mitigation program. Tell us about that program, and can it be used citywide?
Absolutely. So no one wants rats in their community. It's unacceptable. And if you think about why are there so many rats in New York City, it's because a perfect storm happened where there were cuts to the sanitation budget during COVID. Then we had the restaurant sheds that were permitted for outdoor dining. The rats would burrow under a lot of these sheds. And when the sanitation budget was cut, the rats started populating. And the problem with rats is once they start populating, very hard to get rid of them. So basically, we researched in my office what other cities were doing, because as you visit other cities across the country, you just don't see the level of rats that we have in the city. And I found that Boston and San Diego were using this unbelievably interesting technique where they fumigate the tree pits, because tree pits are where most rats live and populate. And so by treating the tree pits, you can eradicate the rats. So we found this technique. We found an exterminator who uses this technique, and we literally use city council funds to bring this exterminator on. And we started on certain blocks in my district, and the exterminator would fumigate the tree pits. And we had an almost over 95% success rate in terms of eradicating these rats. And it can absolutely be scaled and utilized across the city. We have to think outside of the box because it's unacceptable. It's a major health hazard to have these rats running around New York City at the rate that we do.
And let me ask you, are we doing this citywide, or we just did this in your district?
We just did this in my district. I tried to get the city
And
to do this citywide, but
when was this done?
so I launched it 2 years ago and we're still doing it. We've been doing it for the past 2 years with unbelievable success. And if you look at the numbers, we have 50% less rats calls to 911 than the district that is exactly contiguous with mine, which like literally it's the district that is next to mine. So there's no reason why there would be other than the fact that we have been utilizing this technique. And so of course it should be used citywide. And I've tried to
Well,
push for that, but so far it has not happened.
this is unbelievable because we have a rat czar that we forget about. And the rat czar hasn't picked up on this easy idea of what you just came up
No,
with.
I spoke with the rat czar. We've raised it numerous times with City Hall. It has not been done. And I think it has to be done. I mean, we need to be using every tool in our toolbox to fight rats. And this is one of the tools in the toolbox. It doesn't work, for example, on a construction site, or it doesn't work in a restaurant that has rats, but it works in one of the number one places where rats populate, and that is tree pits. And it's cost effective. It's much safer, by the way, Greg, than putting rat poison down, because this is a carbon monoxide that you utilize. And so we should be using this all across the city, without a doubt.
Well, I'm so unfortunately, this is all the time we have for reaching out. We got to come back and discuss this. If anybody's listening, call your council person and tell them you want this treatment done in your area too. Let's put pressure on the city to get rid of the rats. I'm Gregory Floyd, a very special guest, Councilwoman Julie Menin. We got to put you in charge of the city because you got great ideas. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks so much for having me on again. I so appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.